We are going to play now. We are going to move into a little bit of music from an upcoming opera called Aquanetta. And it is all about, well, it's a very complicated kind of story. So I'm going to let Deborah talk about it, Deborah Artman, who wrote the libretto. And I'm going to play the song, or the first track, from the opera Aquanetta, track one. And then we're going to come back and have a interview with Deborah. But this is the first track of an opera called Aquanetta. Shades of 1940s Hollywood jungle music. Deborah Artman, welcome to the morning show on WGXC with Matthew Tombers, Wednesday, January 3rd. Tell us what we were just listening to, and how does this all fit together? And it's an amazing story.
Well, hello, Matthew. Thank you for inviting me here. That was the opening segment of first scene from Aquanetta, the opera, written by the composer Michael Gordon and I'm the librettist on the project.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally written in 2004, and we had one production of that version in Aachen, Germany, and...
Capital of Charlemagne's Empire.
Really?
Yes.
In 2010, we had a few excerpts that were part of the New York City Opera Box Festival, and the woman who produced that, Beth Morrison, has ever since wanted to produce the entire opera, and she now has her own opera festival called the Prototype Festival in New York City that runs every year in January.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a 7-year dream of hers come true to produce Aquanetta. And it's a chamber version of the opera,
mm-hmm.
Meaning the orchestration has changed. Michael reworked it to fit a smaller ensemble. The voices have changed slightly. It's now for 3 sopranos rather than 2 sopranos and an alto, and also a tenor and bass. And rather than a full choir, there's a female chorus.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than a full orchestra, it's a smaller electric instrumentation. I believe there's 6 instruments. And we are super excited about hearing it.
And where and when will this be performed?
It's at the Gelsey Kirkland Arts Center, which is in Dumbo.
Okay.
On J Street. And our opening night is next week, January 9th. And the run goes through January 14th, Sunday.
Wow. I think that's... You must tell the story behind the story of the opera, and because Aquanetta is a real person.
Aquanetta was a real person, and the genesis of this story is that Michael saw her obituary in the New York Times, and where she was listed as Aquanetta in the obituary. And I guess he's a fan of reading the obituaries in the New York Times. And he read it, and it was very brief, but he thought it sounded odd. And he started reading a bit more about her and became intrigued but baffled. And he called me up and he said, "Deborah, would you like to help me write this opera about Aquanetta? I have a feeling this would make a good opera." And so I began researching her past, and this was pre Wikipedia, pre so much of what's on the internet today. There was very, very little, if nothing, about her on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I found some sci-fi fan compilation books, like magazine interviews, compilation books about her, a few things on eBay, you know, old fan magazines about her. And she was a B-movie star from the 1940s. She was Universal Pictures' first female movie monster. That was her claim to fame. She told people in interviews that she came to New York City, and she told people then that she was Native American, and she was extremely beautiful. And she was so beautiful, people stopped her on the street and said, "You should be a model." And she went to a modeling agency, and she told the agent that her name was Bernou Aquanetta, and she told him that it meant burning fire in deep water, which he believed. And he said, okay, that's too long. We'll shorten it to just Aquanetta. And so she became known as Aquanetta, and she became a woman about town. She escorted men to places like, the clubs of the day.
Leona Nettie's.
I don't know, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but, you know, all the fancy clubs of the day.
And Club 21, all up and down 51st Street were right. These clubs. Leona Nettie's was on the west side, and 21 was on the east side.
Yeah, and there are some that are...
There were a bunch of them. They were just all up and down that street.
And they all, you know, everyone went to them and mm-hmm. to be seen. And Walter Winchell reported on their mm-hmm. whereabouts. And
exactly.
He took a liking to her, and he and William Randolph Hearst decided that being Native American wasn't sexy enough, and so they began calling her the Venezuelan Volcano and gave her a Latin identity because Latin women were in at the time. And so she began speaking with a fake Latin accent. And then somebody said
to her, the Hollywood story.
Yeah, someone said to her, you are so beautiful, you should be in pictures. So she went to Hollywood and sort of posed around a swimming pool at one of the big hotels. And one of the casting agents for MGM said, you look good, you know, come meet the big boss. And when word got out that she was meeting with that big boss, the Universal Pictures big boss said, no, come to my studio. And she ended up at Universal. She had tiny bit parts in mm-hmm. a few films, and then her big break was a film called Captive Wild Woman, in which she played the result of a mad scientist's experiment on a gorilla. And it had always been his dream to transform an ape into a woman via glandular experimentation and a brain transplant.
And the mad scientist was played by John Carradine, who correct. Did a lot of mad scientists.
Yeah, he was known then as the hardest working man in pictures because he constantly went from role to role to role, and also had a one-man touring Shakespeare mm-hmm. Theater piece.
And did radio theater and everything.
Yeah, he just worked constantly. So he was the mad scientist. There was a character who played the gorilla. There was Aquanetta, who played the beautiful result of his experiment. There was a character we created called Brainy Woman, who was based on the nurse in the original movie, who at one point protested the experiment and said to the doctor, you know, your morals are being corrupted and you're going too far. And he looks at her and says, oh, you have a very intelligent brain. I could use that for my experiment. And the next thing you hear is this blood-curdling scream, and she disappears. And obviously her brain is used for the making of Aquanetta's character. And the other character in our opera is the director of the movie itself. And
we have another guest in the studio, just so you know. Her name is Bella.
Yes, hey.
And she's keeping us company.
Yeah.
And you're listening to WGXC 90.7, Acre Hudson, Catskill. And we're talking to Deborah Artman about Aquanetta, the musical, the opera.
The interesting thing about Edward Dmytryk, the man who directed the opera, is he later became one of the Hollywood Ten, the group that protested the blacklisting of artists and writers and actors during the communist era in Hollywood. And then, maybe 6 months or so after, he was part of this original group, he then recanted because he needed the work. And so he became a controversial figure, and there's a line in the opera, which is from an interview, where Aquanetta says, "Once you are cast or miscast, you are that forever." And it's something that applies to every person in the movie, in the opera, because the opera is, what we did was base it on the laboratory scene of Captive Wild Woman. We decided, after researching her life and all the other people in the movie, to whittle it down to the 3 minutes of this laboratory scene and explore both the interior life of the person playing the character as well as the character, him or herself, in the movie. So both the inside and the outside of each character are being explored in this opera.
It sounds fascinating. Now, because we're coming to the top of the hour, and Reverend Kim with A Bright Side Somewhere is going to be here shortly, let's review when people and where people can see Aquanetta, the opera.
The opera is being performed at the Gelsey Kirkland Arts Center. It's on J Street in Brooklyn, in Dumbo. The composer is Michael Gordon, who is one of the co-founders of Bang on a Can, highly esteemed, fantastic composer. He will have you dancing in your chair. His work is all about rhythms on top of rhythms. He really has fun with the whole sci-fi genre and taking that apart, and plus adding incredibly beautiful layering and other passages to the music. The director is Daniel Fish, who is bringing his own sensibility and knowledge about movie making to this production. And the performances begin the 9th of January and run through the 14th. We're really excited about it.
2 weeks from today. Is that it? No. 13 days from today.
Less.
Oh, wow.
Less than a week from today?
January 14th.
Is that next Tuesday?
Oh, that's next Tuesday?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, okay.
We're moving towards tech and dress rehearsal, so
okay. Things
are accelerating on our end.
Well, we have to say goodbye now, Deborah, because we've got Reverend Kim coming in. This is Matthew Tomber.